Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 810, Tim Chen, co-founder and CEO of NerdWallet.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Karabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
My family was middle class. We were very frugal. Our big financial goal was definitely paying college tuition for my sister and I.
Welcome back to So Money. I'm your host, Farnoosh Tarabi. Today, we're in conversation with Tim Chen. He's the founder and CEO of NerdWallet. It's a personal finance website that started from a personal experience and need. You know, Tim got laid off in the 2008 recession from a job on Wall Street. And it was in that time frame, his sister came to him for some quick financial advice. She just wanted to find the best credit card. You know, simple. And his parents around the same time were seeking Tim's advice for buying a mutual fund. And so he did like most of us would do. He went to the internet and found that his search was unfruitful and frustrating. And it was at that point that he became inspired to create a well-designed and unbiased destination for financial advice and products. He started NerdWallet with $800. Today, it's worth hundreds of millions and has over 300 employees. What is next for the company, for the world of personal finance products and services? And what are some of Tim's own rules when it comes to managing his money? Pleased to welcome Tim Chen. Tim Chen, welcome to So Money, my friend. How are you?
Great, great. Thanks for having me, Farnoosh.
Yeah, this is a really cool time to be connecting with you. This is now 10 years almost to the day that you were laid off during the recession. Who wasn't? You working in the financial services industry on Wall Street. And that's when the journey of NerdWallet kind of began. But Christmas 2008 was kind of when you got your pink slip. How are you going to celebrate? That's a big milestone for you.
It is. I can't believe it's been 10 years. A lot of gray hair since then. But yeah, we have so much to do. It's kind of hard to pause and celebrate.
Yeah, well, you should. And today we should mention we're recording this on Halloween, although it's airing in November. You have a family. What are your plans for Halloween?
Well, there's a street in San Francisco that is thriving with kids trick-or-treating. Our CFO lives on that street. So my wife and I are going to go visit her and trick-or-treat with them.
Nice. And okay, so I am not dressed up this year because that's my life right now. But I am, I guess you could say, dressed up as a tired mom of two / podcaster. What's your costume?
I am the notorious RBG this year. We had the fortune of taking a trip to the Supreme Court recently, and we got to meet a bunch of justices and thought it would be really cool to dress up.
Oh my gosh, you have to post this online and send it to the original gangster, RGB. RBG, RBG, wow.
I will tag her.
You got to tag her. I'm sure she's always on Instagram. I'm sure.
Yeah.
But let's get serious for a moment. NerdWallet's a serious business. This didn't always start with the idea that it was going to turn into a $500 million company. It was kind of grown out of a personal situation you were in. Family members were coming to you, asking you for your financial advice. You didn't really have a solution for them. And so like any great entrepreneur, inventor, you went and you created something, built something, which is now NerdWallet. But take us back to the moment when you were kind of just creating the beginnings of NerdWallet. What started it all?
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, I had been, you know, fired really recently, and my sister called me and said, "Hey, Tim, what credit card should I get?" And I said, "Let me Google that for you."
Right.
So I spent about 30 seconds on Google and was kind of confused. I was finding a lot of marketing materials and not a lot of analysis that I thought would be helpful. And so that's really where it all started. I put together a spreadsheet for her from the biggest banks. It got forwarded to a few friends, and you know, it kind of started from there. You know, that was in the early days. I never really set out to build a big company. I mean, the intent was really just to put some useful utilities out there for people. But, you know, what kind of started happening in credit cards, which was bridging that information asymmetry gap that consumers have with banks in terms of features and APRs and things like that, that proved to be a similar problem that existed in all financial products, whether you're talking about a mortgage or a deposit account or an auto insurance policy. So we started blogging and putting tables up and tools up to help people with all those things. And, you know, 10 years later, we're over 100 million visitors a year and 3 million members who are helping out.
That's really incredible. And I really appreciate how you built the company financially, because I remember as I was a partner with you guys a couple of years ago, a few years ago, I got to learn some of the behind the scenes, which I think you've been public about, just how you weren't really quick to raise money, right? Because you wanted to really grow it stealthily and bootstrap it, which looking back, are you glad you did that? Or do you feel like maybe you should have taken some investor dollars earlier?
I'm really glad we built it slowly and in the right way. And, you know, to give a specific example of where that could have affected outcomes, I think when you raise money from a venture capitalist really early, they want to see growth next month. You know, I mean, there's no patience around that. And so instead of taking the time to build things the right way, you might start putting your best minds to work, figuring out how to do paid advertising, for example. And that can lead you down a very slippery slope in terms of the decisions you make about your product and your brand. So really glad we waited such a long time.
Yeah, it was really smart. So the company started with answering a question around credit cards, and that's still a big part of the business, helping people find the right credit card without having to Google it as you attempted to without any success. But now it's so many avenues, right? You go on to NerdWallet, you can learn where to save, how to invest better, questions around your mortgage, personal loans, student loans, insurance, travel. As a leading company in the fintech space, and you mentioned, you know, millions of users, what do you still see a problem? What is the biggest problem still, or what is a new problem that NerdWallet and others have yet to solve, but is really important to you?
Well, there's a lot of big problems out there that are extremely challenging to solve. One of the big ones, I think, is the ability to just shop mortgages. I mean, it's so hard. I bought a home in 2015. I was very fortunate to be able to do that. But the process requires sending, you know, 10, 15 documents to three or four different people, getting on the phone with them, and then getting highly variant pricing from all of them. Something about that just doesn't seem quite right. And I think there's a big opportunity for us to really make that simpler.
Yeah, I would like that too, because I've gone through similar experiences. Hopefully, you know, I think, I don't know, 2015, you'd think by then, maybe they would have streamlined a few things by then, because I know that it was sort of the Wild West during the 2000s. And that's kind of what led to the crisis and the travesties of the recession and the real estate market. But I feel like there's still a lot of room for improvement. And well, hopefully we'll stay tuned. We'll stay tuned. I'll keep refreshing my NerdWallet website. See if you guys get
right.
Well, I'd love to dive into your own personal financial philosophies and your personal experiences with money. And maybe I'll start with maybe a big difference in your life now that you have built this company, you've built your wealth, and I'm sure there's still ways to go. But how has your life changed as it pertains to your finances?
Yeah, my life actually hasn't changed a whole lot. I will say in the early days of NerdWallet, none of us were paying ourselves a salary. And so there really was more of a scarcity mentality in terms of personal finances. And this is actually a big thing I've noticed when we do user research across the country. You know, our country is pretty divided in two, between people who struggle month to month and people who don't. And there's just very different needs for both sides that we've noticed.
Well, for you personally, do you feel like now you have an abundance mindset, and what changed?
I do. So, you know, being able to pay myself a salary and start saving money, my mindset really changed towards, you know, making great decisions for the long run. So, I mean, you know, when I was living more on the margin, I was more likely to take things to the pawn shop, metaphorically speaking, right, rather than make great long-term decisions and investments. So, you know, even when it came to NerdWallet itself, I would spend a lot of my time doing things that were a big time investment that I should have been hiring other people to do. And that really slowed down our pace of growth. But I think the same thing applies to individual family life when you're talking about things like going and getting an education or making smart investments rather than having to have that buffer so that month to month you're okay.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or problem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So, finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/SoMoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/SoMoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/SoMoney.
You were interviewed in Inc. magazine, and one of the quotes that I pulled from there, I don't know if you remember saying this, but I will read the quote, and I think it's so interesting. I'd love to talk about it. But it was in the context of becoming successful and, you know, how that impacts your family, your kids in particular. And you said at the same time that you want the company to do well, that there is no upside of becoming filthy, stinking, famous, or well off. Do you still believe this? And what's the fine line? I mean, I think there's a way to be successful and filthy rich and still raise kids that that are financially smart and respectful and see the value in things.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely possible. It might be a lot harder. I think, you know, I definitely think a lot about how to impart upon my future children the mindset that, you know, there's a correlation between hard work and being able to have a self-deterministic life. And I think the risk of losing that as you grow up in certain family situations is real. So it's something I worry about a lot.
How would you characterize your upbringing, financial upbringing? And maybe is there a money memory that you have growing up that really sticks out?
I do. My family was middle class. We were very frugal. Our big financial goal was definitely paying college tuition for my sister and I. In hindsight, I realized that. I always observed growing up that, you know, something seemed a little bit interesting because my parents were always hardworking, smart people, but not really getting ahead financially. So it drove a lot of curiosity as to why that might be happening. And, you know, I think that's actually one of the reasons I got really curious about the financial world behind the velvet rope, which at the time I thought of as Wall Street, and really wanted to go work there for a bit and see what that was all about. And I'm sure that actually planted some of the seed of really wanting to increase access to, you know, great financial advice for everyone. I think, and, you know, in hindsight, my parents made a lot of great choices, but I think they also had a bunch of big misses too. Probably should have been more long-term in their investment mentality. Probably should have not bought a bunch of rental property in a distressed state. So, you know, there's things like that probably could have made a big difference.
Mm. How about for yourself? What would you say is your biggest money mistake?
Oh my gosh. So my first big lesson that, you know, started with a face plant was really learning the difference between speculating and investing. So, you know, back in 2000, I was just getting started in college, and I essentially was skipping class and day trading with my entire net worth, which is very small at the time, but meaningful to me then. And, you know, technology stocks were all the rage. They had been going up. People were buying them just because they had been going up. And I think over time, as I transitioned into a career in investing, I learned the difference between that kind of speculation versus trying to, you know, buy a piece of high quality companies with sustainable advantages and holding for the long run, which I consider investing. And so those two things are very different to me. And so I think things keep on coming back around over and over again. So, you know, as I look at things like cryptocurrency, I can't help but be reminded of some of the mistakes that I made in the past.
Let's talk about that for a second. Okay. So crypto, what are your thoughts on that? Should people be as excited about it as the hype suggests?
Yeah, I'm, you know, my personal belief is that crypto is highly speculative. It's essentially the same as buying Beanie Babies or anything else. You know, there's a fixed number of Beanie Babies. There's no inherent value. The value is dependent on what other people will pay. And yeah, I mean, the legitimate uses I see for crypto in the world are essentially money laundering, because it's anonymous, it's immutable, and so it's actually a fantastic vehicle for money laundering. Besides that, I haven't seen any real commercial applications take place. And I think that's why you end up with, you know, such a volatile and uninvestable market, in my opinion. Mm. Now, in terms of behaviors I see around me, I see a lot of people borrowing money to go buy crypto. In fact, wow. You know, that, right. I mean, it's like you look at some of the crypto platforms out there, and, you know, they'll sell you monthly subscriptions to go borrow money to buy crypto. That doesn't seem like a good idea for anyone.
Yeah, that I would agree with. Yikes. Okay. Leverage your life so you can buy something that's completely speculative. Yeah, that sounds brilliant.
That's right.
tell us about a piece of financial advice that you're really thankful you received. This question comes from our sponsor, Chase Slate, and they, in partnership with So Money, we're asking guests like you, with Thanksgiving being in the month of November, what you're thankful for when it comes to your finances and the advice maybe that really helped you get there.
Yeah. If you know, the one that was the biggest single lever for me was rolling over my 401k from my last job. What I didn't realize until a couple of years after starting NerdWallet is that it is very typical for your old employer's 401k to be charging you something like 1% a year. In terms of an excess management fee on top of everything else. And if you think about the impact of that compounding over 40 or 50 years, that's really, really substantial. So a few years late, I finally rolled over my old 401k and ended up saving quite a bit of money every year.
That's great. That's really good. All right, Tim, let's do some So Money fill in the blanks, shall we? This is when you just finish the sentence. Okay, first thing that comes to mind. If I won the lottery tomorrow, the first thing I would do is?
I would not do anything differently. I am quite blessed to be doing something I love. It's something I've thought about a lot, actually.
Do you play the lottery? Do you do anything speculative with your money?
I do. I've played the lottery. I've probably bought 100 lottery tickets over the last 10 years. Sometimes it's just too tempting to pass up.
I don't play. I'm a sore loser. I mean, I think the odds are better of building a billion-dollar company, which you're on the way to doing. So you've sort of created your own lottery.
Statistically speaking, I'd be really curious if that's true. Maybe it is.
I wonder if there are more billionaires out there than there are lottery winners, like real, like billion-dollar lottery winners. Let's just level the field. Billion-dollar.
I mean, how many?
There's really. I think this was the lottery we just witnessed. Billion, 1.2 or 1.4 billion. That's the highest I've ever heard in my lifetime.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're right.
Yeah. So it's statistically, it's a little harder, but anyway, when I spend my money to make my life easier or better, I like to spend my money on
Uber Eats.
Uber Eats.
I live in, yeah, it's really, indefensible and bad, but I live right in the geographic center of San Francisco, and I can order food from any neighborhood in the city, which is really dangerous and really awesome. So living a really busy life, it's tough to cook with a family of two right now. And so we end up ordering a lot of Uber Eats.
Yeah. I've never tried Uber Eats. I'm big about Seamless, Caviar. There's a couple others, but Uber Eats, I've never tried. Is that your favorite?
Yeah, they have a great selection. And my theory is that they're about 3 minutes faster than the other ones because they have their own driver network. So it's pretty incredible. You can get McDonald's in like 10 minutes, which is unbelievable.
All right. When I was growing up, you may have already alluded to this, but let's hit it again. When I was growing up, the one thing I wish I had learned about money is?
I wish my parents had taught me to manage up at work. That ended up being a really, really bad thing for my career that ultimately resulted in me getting fired. So big financial impact.
Wait, so you call it getting fired. I thought it was a layoff, which if that is what happened, I feel like you should call it a layoff because, you know, it's almost like takes the blame off you. But do you feel responsible for losing your job?
Oh, yeah, it was definitely my fault.
Tell me everything.
I really can't. I've
They'll sue you, yeah. I guess. Okay. but what was the lesson learned again? Repeat that you learned about being on that job. Oh. Do you regret getting fired, or was it a good? I mean, ultimately, it was a good thing, but in the moment,
ultimately it was a good thing. I think it wasn't until I became an employer myself that I really started to understand some of the important parts about, you know, functioning well within a company, communication, supporting your team, supporting your teammates. I had a lot of maturing to do. I think it's something that potentially my parents could have helped me out with.
Hmm. All right. When I donate, I like to give to blank because?
I like to give to things that I consider to have really high leverage. So things like investigative journalism or Wikipedia or places like that, because I think it spreads the truth. And ultimately, I think that, you know, groups of people will do great things when the truth is out there about the conflicting interests that exist in the world. And transparency is a huge vehicle for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I know a lot of people on this show who listen and even guests have speculated or have been worried about a market crash looming. And I just want to know, because you're in the biz, and I'm sure you have some observations about this or some guesses about this, but what can you say as far as like where we're headed economically and what people should be really focusing on over the next year, let's say just over the next 12 months?
Yeah, I have a few thoughts here. I think I've learned over my prior career that I'm too stupid to predict the future of the financial markets. But I do see a really, really healthy economy. You know, it's the reason interest rates are going up is because the economy is so healthy. And fundamentally, I don't see any change to that right now. So, you know, I think the best, my personal advice for investors is to think long term and don't try to time the market and, you know, find low cost ways to index the economy.
Yeah. I have to agree. And all the while, make sure you're asking the good questions and tapping into resources, free resources to help you along the way. NerdWallet, of course, being at the forefront of all of that. So thank you for building NerdWallet, Tim. It's not a small feat. And I know that there are a lot of moving parts and it's a big promise to be able to give people the financial advice that they need, but you're doing it really well. And we thank you for it.
You're welcome. I appreciate the support, Varnoosh. Really, really thank you.
To learn more about Tim and his company, visit nerdwallet.com. You can also follow them on Twitter and Instagram at nerdwallet. All this info is available for you for free at somoneypodcast.com. If you missed any of this, including if you want to read the transcript, head over to that website. And while you're there, click on Ask Farnoosh. That's where you can leave me a question for our Friday episodes. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope your day is so money.
hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.